worked in the commodity business futures business for over 20 years on both the trade side of the business at ED&F Man and then on the sell side as a coffee broker for numerous years, most recently as a managing director at Citigroup heading up North American sales for futures. And I currently represent the Australian Wheat Board Risk Assist Unit as a commodity derivatives consultant. This morning, our panelists are going to discuss a number of topics pertaining to investing in commodities and why commodities have emerged from the shadows as the place to be. Recently, I read an article stating that even Alan Greenspan can't make more corn, which I thought particularly apt. Raw material and commodity prices have historically borne little to no correlation to financial markets, as we're going to discuss, but investors have traditionally been shy of the volatility attributed to the asset class and the mystique of futures. Only recently have investors started to focus on the more important diversification benefits of commodities as a separate asset class, the favorable risk-return profile, and the inflation hedge. As a result, we're now seeing a substantial movement of assets into commodity-specific alternative products, including managed futures, physical commodity funds, and commodity-linked indexes. As an example, some of the latest entrants are pension funds and endowments. The Harvard University Endowment, for example, has 13% of its funds in commodities. That's just under $3 billion of its $22.6 billion endowment. PGGM, the second largest pension fund in the Netherlands, with 65 billion euros under management, has approximately 5% invested in commodity futures via total return swaps, as opposed to commodity-linked equities, and have returned 12.7% net over 5 years. So what should you be investing in, and what are the considerations? We're privileged that on our panel this morning, we have a broad representation of approaches to commodity investing. I'm going to ask each of our panelists to take a few minutes to speak, and then we'll pose some questions and finally open to the floor. Just to introduce our panelists, we have Rajpal Arul. I got it wrong. Rajpal Arul Ghassam. Rajpal is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Archetype Risk Advisors, Inc. and its affiliates, ARA, and is responsible for overall firm management, long-term business strategy, firm-wide portfolio and risk management, and product research and development. Rajpal has 3 decades of experience managing hedge fund companies and developing quantitative trading strategies and risk models for alternative investment funds. His areas of expertise include fixed income arbitrage, systematic technical analysis modeling, long, short, and multi-factor market neutral equity strategies, and volatility-based strategies. Roland Astroff is President, Chief Executive Officer, and a Director of Integrated Managed Futures. Roland has been registered with the CFTC in the United States as an associated person and principal since June 1997, and with the Ontario Securities Commission as an advisor since February 1999. Mr. Astroff is an associate member of the National Futures Association, a member of the MFA. Previously, Mr. Astroff was an investment advisor with BMO, Nesbitt Burns from 91 to 96, and a commodities broker with Scotia McLeod from 88 to 1990. Grant Jafarian is the senior research analyst at Efficient Capital Management here in Naperville. Founded in 99, Efficient allocates $800 million across the trading advisor and FX manager universe. But Efficient Grant oversees all quantitative manager analysis, facilitates the firm's research effort, and is a voting member of Efficient's Investment and Allocation Committee. Prior to joining Efficient in April 2004, Grant was the founder and managing partner of Petra Intraday Trading Systems. An emerging trading advisor, his career in the managed futures area began in 2001 as a trading at Analytical Investment Management NV of Michelin in Belgium, where he established a US trading office. Jim Jenkins is managing director of ED&F Man Commodity Services. A 23-year veteran of the soft commodity markets, he is a member of Man's executive committee. Formerly president of ED&F Man Coco, Jim now oversees the group's research, brokerage, and proprietary trading operations. Jim is a member of the NIBOT, Control Advisory Committees, a past chairman of the Cocoa Merchants Association of America. Chris Whitney is our last panelist. After graduating from Cornell in 87 with an engineering degree, Chris served five years in the US Navy as a design engineer and program officer for the Nuclear Submarine Force, achieving the rank of lieutenant. Chris left the Navy in 92 to attend Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, where he earned his MBA. Chris then joined the commodity trading and processing firm Cargill Inc., where he served 6 years in a number of capacities with Cargill's energy, livestock, coffee, sugar, and cocoa trading businesses. Chris has spent the last 3 years at Cargill as a senior trader in its coffee trading businesses, left there in 2000 to trade commodities for the AIG Commodity Arbitrage Hedge Fund, and he has spent the last 5 years successfully managing commodity positions at major hedge funds. In 2004, Chris helped found Heritage Capital with four other experienced commodity traders. Heritage Capital is a fundamentally traded, diversified commodity hedge fund with $70 million under management. So I'd like each of our panelists perhaps to describe a little bit of how they approach commodities and their strategy from their own business standpoint, and then we'll get into some questions. Rajpal, would you like to start?
Can you hear me?
All right, my firm, which we refer to as ARA, we run a CTA portfolio, which is primarily a systematic trend following, medium to long-term trend following portfolio, which focuses on physical commodities. We trade about one-third financial futures and about two-thirds physical commodity futures, such as grains, metals, energy, softs, and meats. We've also run a very large market neutral equity portfolio over the last decade, and prior to that, we've run a fixed income arbitrage fund.
Thank you. Similar to Raj, I run a CTA that is focused two-thirds on physical commodities, which include broadly industrial and agricultural commodities. The other third is financial. Differences may include the fact that we're a very long-term manager. We tend to look for positions that we hold on average a year, and sometimes longer than that. And we have absolutely no equity exposure in our portfolio and limited fixed income exposure. The bulk of our financial exposure is through currencies. And the primary reason for that is when we designed our program, we designed it to be a diversifying asset class. And a fair amount of our research had shown that the inclusion of equities in our portfolio, while increasing total return or absolute return, actually decreased the diversification benefit to portfolios that already had an exposure through either traditional or other hedge fund strategies. The business Integrated Managed Futures Corp that I'm president of is a subsidiary of Integrated Asset Management, which is probably Canada's leading alternative asset management company. As a company, we manage about $3 billion in assets in private equity, private debt, real estate, hedge funds, and managed futures.
Thanks, Amanda. Well, I have a job I love at Efficient Capital. I get to more or less go all over the world and look for good managers like Roland and Raj. So what does Efficient do? We were started, as Amanda mentioned, in 99 with the mandate of trying to maximize the benefits inherent in the managed futures space. Our founder, Ernest Jafarian, came out of a trading background. He traded for Chicago Research and Trading here in Chicago for many years in the 80s and early 90s. And then kind of stumbled across the CTA space, the commodity trading space, fell in love with it, and created Efficient Capital to try to take advantage of that. So our mission is really to maximize the benefits, which we see as tremendous cash efficiency. As I'm sure we'll be talking about, commodities are very cash efficient in the sense that it doesn't take a whole lot of margin to cover positions. Also, we only allocate to managers that trade in exchange traded futures, forwards, and options on futures, as well as foreign exchange. So it's a very liquid investment as well, and we try to make sure that that's something that's accessible for us and our clients. And to do that, we really focus on investing in managed accounts with traders. We believe that gives us the access we really want to the markets. It gives us full transparency of positions. It allows us to cross margin traders one against another. And it gives us a lot of data that we can use for active management in terms of risk, portfolio construction, and even manager selection. So for instance, we'll really request that managers provide us with daily gross our daily performance numbers when we run our analysis and try to determine our portfolios, because that information is available in this space. We want to make sure we use it. We allocate right now about $500 million out to 30-plus traders. We operate two main portfolios. One's a managed futures portfolio, and the other is an FX-only portfolio. So.
I guess my role here today is slightly distinct from the rest of the panelists. I come from more than 20 years in the physical commodity markets, actually working for a merchant firm. For nearly 20 of those years, I was associated with a firm that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, which is Mann Financial. In the year 2000, we split the company, did a management buyout of the commodity merchant businesses from the financial services businesses. Mann Financial is a publicly traded FTSE company. The company that I work for, ED&F Mann, is carrying on the 220-year tradition that we have of private partnership. We don't take any outside money for trading, and we focus primarily on physical commodity flows. When we do trade, we try and focus on what makes us distinct from CTAs, from quantitative people. We don't have some of the balance sheets of the largest hedge funds. We don't have the quantitative computing power or the sort of dark rooms filled with PhDs that some of the trading competitors have. What we do have is, we believe, a very unique role in the flow of the commodities that we trade. That's both a strength and a weakness. We can only be in the physical flows in a certain number of markets. We focus on coffee, sugar, and cocoa, and we feel that we know that from a fundamental point of view better than just about anybody. It also means that we don't have the portfolio diversification that some of the CTAs or larger hedge funds do have. We focus on fundamental supply and demand analysis. We do everything from tracking public statistics to compiling our own private data. We have, we're the largest coffee exporter in both Brazil and Colombia. We are one of the top three cocoa exporters out of Ivory Coast. We are, I think, the biggest dealer, say, of green coffee in the world. So we look at the physical flows of commodities and look for price information that gives us a trading advantage. That tends to be relative value. We do have views on overall supply and demand characteristics of the markets. We do care whether sugar is in a surplus or a deficit situation, but we're much more interested, say, within the coffee market. There might be a overall deficit, but that deficit might be comprised of a surplus of Arabica coffee and a deficit of Robusta coffee. That's a trade that only relatively sophisticated investors get interested in. That's a supply and demand characteristic that there's not a lot of competition in, and it's one that comes from information we believe we get before and understand better than most of our competitors. What we do in the trading world, though, is when we get this research, when we develop trading strategies, we will put that information at the use of good customers. That can be people from commodity producers to commodity consumers, and increasingly we find that people from the speculative community are interested in that kind of information. There's a growing number of macro hedge funds that find that not only is the information useful to them, but trade strategy development, trade execution, and then ongoing monitoring of the research so that you give them exit strategies at the appropriate time also. So we find that for a number of our customers, real fundamental supply and demand research is interesting, and when they get it, sometimes they're developing an appetite now to be involved in the cash commodities as well as the futures.
Thank you, Jim. Chris.
Yes, I'm last, hopefully not least. I'm Chris Whitney. I represent Heritage Capital. Heritage Capital is a discretionary, diversified, fundamentally traded commodity hedge fund. It is managed by a team of five traders who are all experienced commodity physical traders. Each trader has at least 5 years experience, in addition, managing commodities in a hedge fund environment. Each trader is an expert in a particular commodity sector where he typically spent many years as a physical trader as well. And each trader maintains a detailed supply and demand analysis for the commodities in his sector. And from that analysis, we identify mispriced assets and mispriced pricing relationships. At Heritage Capital, we trade purely commodity futures and commodity physicals. We're not trading any Forex, equity, or debt futures. The commodities that we trade are a pretty good basket of the commodities available: energy, grains, livestock, coffee, sugar, cocoa, and we maintain a diversified portfolio. The portfolio is a blend of long-short directional trades, calendar spreads, intermarket arbitrage, and physical commodity cash and carry trades. Heritage Capital was founded in April 2004 by Aubrey McClendon and Tom Ward, who are the CEO and COO of Chesapeake Energy Corporation. They're also the founders of Chesapeake Energy Corporation. Tom and Aubrey are also our principal investors at the moment. We're managing over $70 million currently. For the last year and a half, we've spent basically building our track record. In 2004, we were up about 15% annualized, and in 2005, we're up about 25% year to date. And we are currently preparing ourselves to accept outside investors starting in January 2006. And I'm pleased to be here and look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Chris. We do have some questions which we've given a little preparation to because I think it makes it more interesting for all of you. Alpha has become a cornerstone of the world of alternative investments. How would you define the term as it relates to managed futures, and how do CTAs create alpha through their investment strategies? I'm going to ask Raj to start off with this one.
Okay. I was trained as a theoretical mathematician, and so I'm one of those boring little PhD guys in the dark rooms that you were referring to. I remember, and I want to talk about alpha, and Grant and I are going to talk about alpha, and I want to cover sort of the theoretical aspects of alpha because it's really a misunderstood term. I remember when I was a sophomore in college, I took a course in theoretical, it was called abstract algebra. It's really matrix algebra, but it was called abstract linear algebra, taught by Halmus, who's one of the leading theoretical algebraists in the world. At the end of the course, I could not invert a matrix. However, I could prove whether or not a matrix was invertible. And so that's the sort of background I come from. Alpha is a concept that you cannot really talk about without also talking about beta and without talking about a reference benchmark market index. You cannot talk about alpha in isolation. It makes no sense. So a definition of alpha is the excess return in a portfolio over and above the return that can be explained by the portfolio's exposures to the market. So you've got the word exposures, you've got the word market in there. Well, your exposures to the market reference your portfolio sensitivity to the reference market. So first of all, you've got to decide upon a benchmark index or market index. Typically, that's the stock market. When people talk about alpha and they talk about commodities potentially representing pure alpha, what they mean is it's pure alpha with respect to the stock market. It's a source of return which is not driven by any of the systematic risk factors in the stock market. So what is alpha from a more technical standpoint? Alpha and beta are really regression coefficients. And if you think of y as being the return of your portfolio and x being the return of the market as a whole, then y equals beta x plus alpha, where beta is the relationship between the y and the x. In other words, it's your sensitivity of your portfolio to the market, and alpha is what's left over. It's the residual return that can't be explained by a linear relationship. And you know, Professor Sharp and Markowitz came up with CAPM, which you've all probably read about, and that talks about one beta. We're more sophisticated now. We have multi-factor risk models, which look at general market beta, look at capitalization, your portfolio sensitivity to large cap or small cap, your portfolio sensitivity to growth or value, sector and industry. So now you have a multi-dimensional regression equation where you're measuring your sensitivity to all these different market factors, and you still have something left over, which is your alpha, which cannot be explained by any one of the market exposures to all the different types of systematic market effects. So alpha is really an error term. which my co-managers probably don't want to hear. But it is an error term, and it is it really represents, and I should be careful about saying this in Chicago, but it's actually the error of the efficient market hypothesis followers, because it represents the return that can be achieved over and above the efficient market returns. So how do we talk about alpha in with respect to a managed futures portfolio? There's two types of returns that you can get in a managed futures, well, in an investment portfolio. One type of return is this alpha, which is the return that is essentially derived outside of the market. It comes from some sort of a source of return, some sort of a return stream over and above the systematic effects of the marketplace. Obviously, managed futures enjoy that source of alpha. For example, the sugar market, the daily movements in the sugar market are not caused by the movement in the S&P. There are obviously macroeconomic factors which drive economies, and a growing economy will drive the stock market. A growing economy will also drive consumption, which will lead to demand for sugar. But it's not the movements in the stock market that cause the movements in sugar. So they truly are uncorrelated sources of return, and you can truly generate alpha by investing in sugar, coffee, cocoa, you know, whatever. So that's one source of return, and that is pure alpha. That really is alpha. It's a source of return outside of the systematic effect. Another source of return, which people mistakenly call alpha, is sort of skill-based returns, market timing. If I was a stock market manager, for example, and I was managing a large cap portfolio, and my boss told me, your benchmark is the S&P 500 because you're managing a large stock portfolio. If I decided to only trade the S&P 500 and go long when I thought the market was going up and go flat when I thought the market was going down, in fact, I have an actively managed portfolio, and my beta is always one when I'm actively investing, because I'm always investing in exactly the market. However, if I'm a skillful manager, I can actually outperform the market by being out of the market when the market's going down and in the market when the market's going up. So I can outperform the market. It's a skill-based form of return, but it's technically all beta. It's not alpha. It's actually lack of beta. So that's another form of return. Managed futures enjoys that form of return too, in the sense that most managed futures managers take directional bets in commodities. We go long gold when we think it's going up, we go short gold when we think it's going down. And so we actually have access to pure alpha through a source of returns totally unrelated to stock and bond markets, and skill-based returns which come from active management. So now none of you know nothing about how to generate alpha, just like I did at the end of my matrix algebra course. So Grant, would you explain what I just said, please?
Well, I thought you did a pretty good job of explaining the difference between alpha and beta. I don't know about the efficient reference, but you know, thinking about alpha generation in managed futures I should maybe start by saying thinking about beta in managed futures isn't terribly easy. Because the space is so diverse, you know, it's no longer just a long-term trend-following environment. Now, long-term trend-followers are out there, and a lot of them are very good, and we have a couple representatives on our panel that do a very good job of it. But when you start dissecting managed futures, what it looks like now, you realize that strategies are covering a tremendous spectrum. So for instance, I mean, you know, the long-term trend-follower might be looking at a momentum-based systematic technical system, and yet you can look at another manager down the street who's trading 100% discretionarily using fundamentals. You know, you can go to another city and you'll find a fellow who's doing nothing but trading, you know, on the Eurex exchange at an intraday level, just very short, maybe holding positions for 15 or 30 minutes. And what we found is when we start trying to dissect these managers and determine an appropriate benchmark or an appropriate beta for some of them, it becomes really difficult because not only do they have no correlation, really, to traditional asset classes, but they have virtually no correlation to the managed futures industry as we think of it in terms of trend following. And in fact, they have very little correlation to anybody already in our portfolio. So you're really starting in ground zero, which might be to say that in terms of generating alpha in managed futures, there's the potential for a lot of it there in the sense that everybody's approaching things differently. Of course, our job, I think, as a multi-manager, of somebody who's managing multiple managers, we really do need to determine an appropriate benchmark or beta for a lot of these fellows who are doing things in a very unique fashion. So we try to run regression analyses, we try to run all sorts of different tests, try to find partners in the industry that trade like them and use them for benchmarks. And for some people, it's a little bit easier. If we're looking at a long-term trend follower, we can look at the industry. We can say, okay, how much is this particular manager outperforming the S&P Managed Futures Index, which coincidentally, you know, maybe isn't the best benchmark this year. It hasn't been doing particularly well. But nonetheless, there is a representative index of kind of the long-term trend following class, and it's pretty easy to define alpha from that. But when you look at different managers, it becomes a little more difficult. So how do you find it? I think you really got to look manager by manager and try to determine a manager's specialization, where they're really providing an edge. And more often than not, you might discover that they're producing quite a bit of alpha because that there really isn't a whole lot of beta that you can derive from it. And it's, yeah, so.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Jim and Chris a question. What is the difference between investing in physical commodities versus commodity futures? Jim, do you want to start off with that one?
Sure. I think for us it would probably come down to the most important factor being cost of carries. And the cost of carries to us are both direct and indirect. I think quite often when we get a trader who's coming into a position where he's got to deal with a commodity he's unfamiliar with, one of the first things he'll ask for is sort of a forward pricing curve. I think a lot of us are familiar with the cost of carrying futures. That's going to be your contango. And the cost of carrying cash commodities should theoretically converge with the cost of carrying futures over time. But the, I think, interesting sort of aberrations that occur and the ones that we find present real trading opportunities for us is that the market's perception of what carry is rarely the true true reality of what the exchange rules say that carry is. And that comes down to things like the perishability of an agricultural commodity. It might have to do with regrading, costs of having to recertify qualities. And I think that there are probably some commodities that are a hybrid, have some characteristics of financial futures, where that retenderability and cost of carry from 1 month to the next is relatively fixed. I'd maybe hold out gold as an example. And then there are other commodities where the spot month gets very technical, where the exchange rules really don't lend themselves to a lot of transparencies. Something like cocoa might be an example of that, where you have perishability, you have food and drug involvement in the transaction at the exchange level. You have fumigation and all sorts of other considerations at the warehousing level. So I think the big distinction to us comes down to the cost of carry, and where we find the opportunities is that the cost of carry is rarely perceived by the general market to include the indirect cost.
Chris, trading a combination of the two, would you comment on that?
Sure, of course. Just building on what Jim said, my view of physical commodities would be, please do not try this at home unless you know what you're doing. The physical commodities can be very complex. They can be very illiquid at times. There can be substantial carrying costs, as Jim was mentioning, for storage, for insurance, for quality degradation. At times, physical commodities can be out of position geographically so that you have to transport them in order to sell them, which you can incur transportation costs. So it's a complex market, which is sometimes not well represented by the futures market. This is a case, I think, where the derivative contract, the futures contract, is a far more suitable investment vehicle for most investors. Futures are far more liquid, and they don't have some of these disadvantages in terms of geography and quality degradation that physicals do. On the other hand, physical commodities, for an experienced physical commodity trader, do offer some opportunities. You can often buy physical commodities at a discount to the futures. And as Jim was mentioning, you can often hedge physical commodities forward at a premium to your cost of carry, and you can lock in a cash and carry margin. So fortunately for investors, there are a handful of funds who are managed by physical commodity traders who understand physical commodity markets and who are investing in physical commodities, and one of which happens to be Heritage Capital, who I represent. And I would recommend anyone who's interested in investing in physical commodities that they invest through one of those funds.
Thank you. Investing in a CTA or managed futures versus a long-only index, so active versus passive investing. Numerous investment banks are now offering products to replicate the indexes, but adjusting the weighting. Why not simply invest in a managed futures fund? And Roland, this one's probably for you to start with. I'm going to do this.
There we go. This is actually, the reverse question is the one that we typically get asked. With the popularity of the long-only indices, I'm often asked, well, why shouldn't I just invest in a long-only index as opposed to a managed futures program? And this, the answer to that, I'm going to look at it from three different perspectives. There are structural issues in investing in physical commodities or long-only indices which are important to understand, and relates to what Jim and Chris were talking about, that futures are not physical commodities. They're entirely different investments, and they have different return streams. So I'm going to talk about the structural differences, and then I'm going to look at the return history, which from the slide it should be quite observable, even in the most casual of observers, that there's a dramatic difference between long-only investing, which is the chart on the, or the line on the bottom, and a managed futures investment, which is the line on the top. There's tremendous advantages to investing through a managed futures program. Lastly, I'm going to take a look at what the diversification benefits are to a traditional portfolio if you look at a long-only index versus a managed futures program. In the first place, as I mentioned, one of the problems when you look at a long-only index, if you're looking at it as an investment in undervalued commodities, there are some shortcomings in investing in a long-only index. And that has to do with the cost of carry. And I'm going to give you just two simple examples. I'm going to look at wheat and I'm going to look at natural gas. Wheat has been an inexpensive commodity since 1998 when it hit its low. It was around $2 a bushel in 1998. It's currently around $2.50 a bushel. So from 1998 until now, it has appreciated by about 50 cents a bushel. If you decided that you wanted to invest in wheat by purchasing futures in 1998, you would have lost $3.50 a bushel in the accumulated cost of carry. So buying a long-only index because you think commodities are undervalued is very dangerous when the actual way to implement that trade is by investing in futures, which are entirely different. Natural gas is a more recent example. Natural gas last year in 2004 hit a peak somewhere in the fourth quarter. Cash natural gas basically went sideways from then until the second quarter and then, of 2005, and then we had a pretty strong rally. Had you owned futures, there was a dramatic contango in natural gas and you would have been off about 50% while cash gas was going sideways. And although the ultimate rally would have given you a rate of return at the peak of this year of about 30% from last year's high, a cash investment rate of return would be more than 100%. So you had to absorb a tremendous amount of cost of carry in order to get that rate of return in natural gas. That's assuming, of course, that you exited at the highs as well. So there are problems with looking at long-only indices. What we did here at Integrated is I put together two representations. One is of a managed futures index, and I used the ITRP 40, which is similar to the S&P managed futures index. Unfortunately, it only goes back to 1990, and so what I did with that is I spliced in the Barclays CTA index from 1980 to 1990, which we think was more similar at that time to the ITRP 40 or the S&P Managed Futures Index. And really what we're trying to capture there is where the bulk of assets managed in managed futures, not trying to capture the wide range of strategies, but really trying to capture where the bulk of managed futures assets are right now. And so we thought that was a more representable index. The other chart on the bottom depicts a long-only investment utilizing commodity futures, so not using the cash investment, but